From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Mike Johnson is attacked for his traditional values and how the Biden administration's foreign policies have set the stage for the current conflict in the Middle East. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. And today I want to start with a special word for our listeners in Ohio. Next week, voters in Ohio can protect life in their state by voting no on Issue 1. Issue 1, if approved, would legalize abortion on demand through all 9 months in the state constitution, making Ohio more like California than their Midwestern roots. The national abortion industry continues to funnel money into this election, having spent more than $18 million so far to blanket the airwaves. So it's critical for Christians in Ohio to get out the vote to reject Issue 1, not only to protect the lives of innocent babies, but to help women avoid the tragedy of abortion. So please, vote no on Issue 1, and don't forget to encourage your friends to do the same. Well, last week on this show, we were thrilled to share the news that Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson was elected Speaker of the House, and already the media is out to get him. On Thursday's edition of Washington Watch Live, Tony Perkins took time out of the show to address some of the media attacks Speaker Johnson has suffered. Here's Tony Perkins.
Well, over the last week, one of the many attacks on Mike Johnson's Christian faith by the so-called media has been that he, quote, believes in a religious litmus test for politicians. Now, this claim by the uber-leftist publication Mother Jones, which the legacy media will often echo or give lift to, published this article in part, and I read, quote, though Johnson now is second in the line of presidential succession, we're still finding out basic and important facts about him and how he sees the world. This includes his alarming record as a hardcore conservative cultural warrior motivated by a Christian fundamentalist belief who has fiercely opposed gay rights. Now, let me insert what that means. That means he has supported natural biblical marriage. Now, back to the article. Called for a total nationwide ban on abortion, proposed the end of no-fault divorce, and urged a return to 18th century values, end quote. Then he goes on to say, one more significant thing I've discovered is that Johnson appears to believe in a religious litmus test for politicians, end quote. Now, all of this, most of which is exaggerations or distortions of what was actually stated, comes from a seminar that Mike and his wife Kelly taught. Now, I happen to know a little bit about this. Not only was I at the seminar and taught a portion of it, but the course Mike and Kelly taught was based on a God and Government course that I've taught going back 25 years. Now, let me go back to the article from Mother Jones. Quote, Johnson was telling the folks in the pews that the only political candidates deserving support are those who share this worldview and who embrace the notion that the United States has been a Christian nation. This, he says, smacks of Christian nationalism and appears to be a religious test for politics, unquote. Now, this guy, or person, I assume it's a guy, didn't check to see what their preferred pronouns were, but it's obvious they, them, doesn't understand Christianity. In fact, them doesn't understand American history either. Let me explain what Mike was actually talking about. As Moses led Israel out of Egypt with the goal of going into the land of promise, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, gave him advice about putting together a decentralized government. And by the way, a decentralized government keeps power from being consolidated in one place. And that's why we have a federalist system of government. It's a deterrent to corruption and tyranny. We read about this, Exodus 18:21. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. Now, these qualities of leadership are actually echoed in the New Testament by Paul. Paul, in his letter to Titus, was telling him to look for certain qualities in church leaders. We read this in Titus 1:7. For an overseer, that is a leader, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. I don't think it is a misapplication, nor do I think we would go wrong by using the same criteria to evaluate political leaders. Now, similar sentiments were stated by John Jay, one of our nation's founders and the first Supreme Court Justice of the Supreme Court. This is what he said, quote, "Providence has given to our people the choice of their ruler, and it is the duty as well as the privilege and interest of our Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers," end quote. Whoa, so how does this line up with a prohibition against a religious test laid out in Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution? Well, let me read that portion of the Constitution. Quote, "The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures and all executives and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution." But then it goes and states this, "But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States," end quote. What does that mean? Well, as it was originally intended, the federal government could not require a religious act or profession to be made in order to hold a public office. It did not apply, by the way, to the states until the Supreme Court expanded it in 1961. This has absolutely no bearing on who or how voters select their candidates. As Christians, we should vote for candidates who align with biblical truth. You have every right to know whether a candidate for office fears God and has a biblical worldview. These same voices in the media who are attacking Speaker Johnson were the ones criticizing evangelicals for not using a religious test when they voted for Donald Trump. If I had a dollar for every time I was asked, "How can you support a man who's been married three times and done X, Y, and Z?" I could retire. And I'm sure that would make some on the left very happy. But here's the truth. I did apply this test in 2016 and 2020. In 2016, I supported Ted Cruz until he dropped out when it was and then it became a choice between Hillary Clinton, who had championed abortion around the globe, and Donald Trump, who had embraced conservative, biblically aligned policies. So in my personal capacity, I chose Trump. Now, I've spent the last 25 years identifying and working with men and women that God has raised up to serve in public office. Those who fear God, are trustworthy, and are guided by truth so that they are not easily corrupted. Call it a religious test if you like, but what it is in reality, it's voters preferring good people so that we might have good government. Don't go away. We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution, and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. If you'd like more information on the Caring to Love banquet that's taking place back in Baton Rouge this next Thursday night, where Ryan Bomberger is going to be speaking, just go to TonyPerkins.com. Love to have you there to be a part of the event. So the war in Israel and its threat to engulf the entire Middle East region joins a growing list of international crises that the Biden administration has repeatedly proven ill-equipped to manage. It's interesting, former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who led the military under both Bush and Obama administrations, recently said that the United States now faces the most international crises since the end of World War II. Well, House Speaker Mike Johnson echoed those sentiments speaking to reporters this morning.
This is a heavy time. If you look over the scope of all human history, and I'm an amateur historian myself, you know, there you'd be hard-pressed to find a moment in our history where there are so many challenges sort of compounded upon us at the same time. And so maybe the time of the Civil War. I mean, I think arguably even in the World Wars and the Great Depression, we've not seen the collection of challenges upon us as we face right now.
Iran, Russia, China, North Korea all pose threats to the United States security and international stability. So how did we go from relative global calm to near global crisis and chaos in such short order? Joining me now to discuss this is former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who served during the Trump administration. He was previously as the director. He served first as the director of the CIA and then as Secretary of State. Prior to that, he was the congressman from the state of Kansas. Secretary Pompeo, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Tony, it's great to be with you again.
So let's start with Israel. What's your latest assessment on their military progress and now the announcement that the Biden administration wants Israel to push the pause button?
Well, it would be a mistake for the Israelis to pause, I think. But in the first instance, it would be a mistake for them to not do what they think is in their best interest, regardless of what the Biden administration or anybody else asked them to do. They need to do the necessary, which is to destroy the barbarians that killed 1,400 of their own. And we should not forget, Tony killed 30 Americans as well. So I hear them talk about pauses and ceasefires. None of that makes any sense to me. If the objective is to take out this terrorist organization, to prevent it from ever inflicting this kind of horrors again, then this has got to be gone at hard and fast and with all the might that Israel can bring to it, certainly with American support. And then America has to do its part, too. We have to continue to remind the world why it is they're engaged in what it is they're doing. And second, we have to make sure that the primary address for the bad actors, it doesn't sit in Gaza, it doesn't sit in the West Bank, it doesn't sit in Lebanon. The primary address for the bad actor sits in Tehran. And the United States is the only nation in the world that can make clear to the Iranians if they escalate this war, there will be real cost imposed on them.
Has that message been communicated?
I don't know. Certainly not publicly. Certainly the actions we have seen publicly have been a bit too equivocal and not clear that there will be real costs. I think now, since October 7th, there have been some two dozen, maybe as many as 30 attacks on American assets, American military in the Middle East and elsewhere, all by Iranian-directed proxies. And as best I can tell, there's only been one rather modest response at some IRGC, some terrorist warehouses. I doubt that Iran views that as a serious, credible threat against the regime, which is the only thing, Tony, as much as we wish it weren't so, the only thing that will slow down Hezbollah or the Houthis that are threatening Saudi citizens every single day with rockets into Saudi Arabia. The only thing that's going to slow them down is an America prepared to confront the real evil, the driver of this evil, and that's the Ayatollah and his henchman, President Raisi.
You know, Secretary, I don't take pleasure in criticizing the administration because I actually want them to do well. I pray regularly for the president. I want him to make the right decisions because it's to our benefit that he makes the right decisions because I actually want to live in a safe country. And I mean, it's to our benefit. But there's a conflict in worldviews in many ways between the Democratic and the Republican parties. There's a propensity on the left to simply want to maybe do conflict containment, where on the left we understand that evil doesn't know boundaries, and so it's like what we see with Israel. It is neutralizing the threat, and I don't know that. Well, my take on this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. It seems like every step this administration has taken in its foreign policy, going back to Afghanistan, has communicated to Iran that we're weak. We're not interested in neutralizing anything.
Tony, you're absolutely right. And your first point is an important one. I'm rooting for America. Today, the president of the United States is President Biden. He's from the other party that I'm not part of. But I am rooting for him and his team to be enormously successful. It matters to me and my family and to our country that they get this right. Unfortunately, they have taken a view that you can use sweet words and American money and diplomacy to push back against evil, right? Whether that was the debacle in Afghanistan that killed 13 Americans now a couple of years back, whether that was what happened in Ukraine. You know, Tony, it seems like that doesn't make the news anymore. Vladimir Putin was permitted to invade Europe. He didn't do that on my watch, on the watch of President Trump. He understood that we were serious about protecting our friends and allies and providing support to them. And when you don't do that, when you allow a Chinese spy balloon to come over your country for 4 or 5 days and do nothing, when you allow them to threaten your friends and you don't support your partners in the region, you call the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia a pariah state. The bad actors can see that. And Chairman Kim, Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, you should know they're all working together and they're working against the things that matter to every American.
Words matter. You knew that as Secretary of State. Donald Trump knew that. The President Biden knows that. And they are analyzing every word we speak to determine whether or not we're serious about maintaining America's interest first or whether or not we subscribe to this idea of a global community. I want to get to, in a moment, kind of the next shoe that could fall. But first, you know a lot about Iran. And today, Iran ascends to the chairmanship of the United Nations Human Rights Council. I mean, this is unbelievable. Well, I should not say that, because the United Nations is useless. They're beyond useless. They are a hindrance and a stumbling block to peace.
Tony, I sadly think that has manifested itself in ways in these last couple of years that make that unequivocally true. They are worse than ineffective. They are dangerous because they provide a facade of peace creation when in fact they are generative for risk. They act in ways that are deeply inconsistent with their very charter. And that's what we were always urging them to do. It's the reason we withdrew from that very council. Is like, you really, with Syria and Iran on the Human Rights Council, you got to be kidding me. So we wanted no part of that. And we didn't give money to the Palestinian UNRWA fund, right, which just funneled the very money that you saw at the tunnels that killed these Israelis. All of these things, they're small in one sense, but they're indicative of a model for how America ought to protect itself and partner with its allies around the world. And when you get that wrong, Tony, it becomes a very dangerous place very quickly, whether it was Secretary Gates that you spoke of earlier or new Speaker Johnson, they've got it right. The world is now a much more dangerous place just 3 years into the Biden administration.
So how do we bring back? I mean, look, I know the world will be a dangerous place. You know, from my perspective, and I know we share the same faith that ultimate peace doesn't come until the Prince of Peace returns. But we need to manage it. We need to try to do everything we can to keep this place in order and peace, so people can live securely everywhere, not just here in the United States. But I think we have a responsibility elsewhere. So how do we bring that back? I mean, what's it going to take to bring back an element of stability in the Middle East and elsewhere?
I hope that the Biden administration can see that they just grabbed the wrong end of the stick with respect to Iran. Right, sitting around the table with them trying to beg to get back into the nuclear deal generated precisely the context against which Hamas conducted its barbaric actions on October 7th, right? That weakness, that appeasement model is dangerous. And so I hope the Biden administration will go back to a model that looked much more like the one that we had. And it extends to things that cross the boundary between foreign and domestic. Think about our own border. If the whole world sees that we're not prepared to defend our border, that we are going to allow tens of thousands of illegals to enter our country every day, they don't for a moment think we're going to go defend someone else's border and help them do that. You have to get these things right, Tony. It is a fundamental understanding of human nature. When one accepts that evil roams the earth, and while we are here, you're right, as an evangelical Christian, I pray one day that Jesus Christ will return. I know that he will. But until that time, we have to demonstrate the Reagan axiom of we win, they lose, and acknowledging this evil and being prepared to confront it. That doesn't mean taking risks that are silly and ridiculous. It doesn't mean sending the 82nd Airborne everywhere. Goodness knows we didn't do that for our 4 years. But we drew red lines that made sense for our country, and when someone crossed them, we defended them precisely as we promised the world that we would.
You know, no apologies needed for being strong and providing security and peace for a large chunk of the world. I mean, that's what America's role has been. And I agree, we don't need to be overly aggressive, but, you know, there's a responsibility comes with those who have been given a lot. And this country has been given a lot, and we have a responsibility to use it wisely. I'm an optimist. Again, I'm rooting that we'll do this right, but I'm very concerned about another country that you and I both know is probably our greatest enemy, and that is China. You tried to keep them, and I think did a pretty good job keeping them in check as Secretary of State. What are they reading into all that is happening right now? And is this a moment where we need to be watching very closely what they do as it pertains to Taiwan?
Undoubtedly, Tony. Of all of these threats, the one that truly can change the way our children and grandchildren live is the Chinese Communist Party led by Xi Jinping. There's no doubt about that. A very, very big military, 1.4 billion people, a big economy, too. That matters. He's watching how we behave. He's going to see whether we give up in Ukraine or whether we stay at it. He's going to watch, are we doing that while still making sure that we're doing the hard work that needs to be done, power projection in the Pacific, the area in which he will begin to expand his hegemonic empire. And then he's certainly watching, do we let our friends and allies do what they need to do? That is, will we let the Japanese, will we let the South Koreans, will we permit them to do the hard work of preparing to defend their own countries? And will we support Taiwan, giving it the tools and intelligence collection capabilities that it needs in order to defend itself? If he sees us walk away from our friends, if he thinks that we will tire too quickly, Tony, that is a bad sign. It's something that Xi Jinping will see, and he'll begin to extend his influence and power in ways that are even deeper than what he's doing on social media today, where he is shaping the minds of our children.
Well, and we see in the foreign policy of this administration, they're pushing what I call the unholy trinity of abortion, LGBTQ, and climate. And they're driving many of our partners away because they're putting strings on our foreign aid, and they're driving them into the arms of China, especially in Africa. In fact, I just saw where President Biden wanting to remove 4 countries from the special trade status in Africa. I mean, this is pushing them right into the arms of China.
And we'd seen, Tony, too, we'd seen what this administration did, essentially swapping out as a priority climate change for what we worked on, which was religious freedom. Right. Make no mistake about it. When we go to Xi Jinping and tell him, hey, we want to work on climate change with you, he smiles and nods and builds another coal-fired power plant. When we talked seriously about tolerance and religious freedom, about the Catholic Church inside of China, about the million Muslims that are held in their camps, the Uyghur camps in the western part of China, when we spoke to those things, we united the world against the threat that people could see, challenging just the most fundamental basic human rights that everyone of every faith can understand matter. And extend, if you trade that out for climate, I think Xi Jinping says these are not serious men and women. These are not people who actually understand humanity and human dignity. And when he sees that, he says they're no different than us. They're no better than us. And I'm going to demonstrate that to the world. And he'll find lots of adherents, whether that's in South America or in Africa or in Southeast Asia. He will see American weakness and decadence, and he will promote it. And when he sees those things, he'll move more aggressively, Tony. It is true every time in the civilization's history. Strong civil societies, people who have a foundational understanding of who they are and their faith, are much more prepared and capable of protecting their own people.
And Mike, you just hit on how an administration shapes the international conversation. When the Trump administration was in position and you were Secretary of State, and you said repeatedly that religious freedom was your number one foreign policy objective, and we had the chance to work together when I was at the commission, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, that was a discussion globally. I remember having those conversations with even Islamic country leaders. Now, you're absolutely right. It's about climate. It's about abortion. It's about the LGBT agenda. Religious freedom doesn't even get a peep from world leaders now as a result of this. Secretary Pompeo, always great to see you. Thank you so much for being generous with your time today. Great to talk with you. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you, Tony. It was great to be with you, and it was a blessing to work with you on religious freedom all around the world. It was fun to be with you today, too.
Well, we're going to keep that work up, so let's team up and do some Amen. Other stuff.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.